Burst your imagination.
To the Week in Links, the show so incredibly efficient that we take you through every day of the week in only 2 hours. My name is Andrea Miller, and I'm here with my co-presenter, Lou Ricketts.
Hello.
Today we're bringing you a mix of comedy and information, fact and fiction, that will hopefully leave you thoroughly entertained, if slightly confused.
Coming up on today's program, we have the answer to why there are no songs about Thursdays, a guide to cheap festivals, we'll have film reviewer Richard Berger here in the studio, and the first ever wireless version of the comedy panel show, Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve?
So without any further ado, let's start the week.
It's just another manic Monday. Wish it was Sunday. That's my fun day. I don't have to run day. It's just another manic Monday.
Well, according to the nursery rhyme, Monday's child is fair of face. So, all you lovely people born on a Monday, you are the beautiful people. Your number include Julia Roberts, Hugh Chignall, Marlene Dietrich, coincidentally all of the Jonas Brothers, and Gordon Brown. So, what about the rest of the week? Well, here's the nursery rhyme in full. Monday's child is fair of face. Tuesday's child is full of grace. Wednesday's child is full of woe. Thursday's child has far to go. Friday's child is loving and giving. Saturday's child works hard for his living. But the child that is born on the Sabbath day is bonny and blithe and good and gay.
But now we have a new imagining of the same poem.
Monday's child just stuffs his face. Tuesday's child, a sad disgrace. Wednesday's child is rather slow. Thursday's child is snorting blow. Friday's child is all asking but no giving. Saturday's child won't work for a living. And the child that is born on the Sabbath day is as useless as the others in every way.
Well, that was clearly written by a disillusioned parent.
Wasn't it written by your dad, Andrea?
Yes, it was.
Burst your imagination.
Well, moving on now. Why are Mondays so hard? Why can't we get up on a Monday morning? Maybe we haven't had enough sleep at the weekend, too many parties and late nights. Or maybe we've had too much sleep. Lions, snoozes on the sofa in front of the Sunday afternoon film.
Personally, I like to rise around noon, go to bed around 4 a.m, and then weep through most of Monday.
Well, if you want to start the week feeling full of energy and not be a pathetic huddled mass like Andrea here, it's important to get a good night's sleep. But not everyone has got the hang of this basic skill. Jenny Aldridge has been finding out the rules for a perfect night between the sheets.
If you've been feeling a bit tired lately, it may be because you're not getting a proper night's sleep, so here are our top tips on how to get a good night's rest. You should always sleep in complete darkness. Even a tiny bit of light can disrupt your circadian rhythm and your pineal gland's production of melatonin and serotonin. If you get up in the night to use the bathroom, as soon as you turn on the light, you will, for that night, immediately cease all production of the important sleep aid melatonin. Don't watch TV right before bed. It's too stimulating to the brain and it'll take longer for you to fall asleep. Again, it's also disruptive to the pineal gland's production of melatonin and serotonin. This next one may sound a bit weird, but try wearing socks to bed. Due to the poor circulation, the feet get cold before the rest of the body, and wearing socks seriously reduces the risk of night waking. This probably isn't too practical for many of us, but try to get to bed early. Our systems, particularly the adrenals, do a majority of their recharging or recovering between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. Also, your gallbladder deposits toxins during the same period, and if you're awake, the toxins then back up into the liver, which then secondarily back up into your entire system and cause further disruption of your health. Prior to electricity, most people went to bed after sundown, which is how nature intended. Try turning the radiators down in your bedroom. Apparently, most of us sleep in a room that's too hot and disrupts our sleep patterns. You shouldn't sleep in a room that's any hotter than 70 degrees Fahrenheit or 21 degrees Celsius. Also, you could try losing weight. As well as being generally disruptive to your health, being overweight can increase the risk of sleep apnea, which will prevent a restful night's sleep. This next one sounds a bit obvious, but avoid caffeine. Some people don't metabolize it effectively, and they feel the effects long after consuming. For some people, even an afternoon cup of coffee can keep them from falling asleep. Try taking a hot bath or a shower before bed, as when the body temperature is raised in the late evening, it then falls at bedtime and facilitates sleep. Lastly, you should try exercising regularly. Even 30 minutes a day can help you get a better night's sleep, but don't do it too close to bedtime, as this may actually keep you awake. Sweet dreams, everyone.
Oh, thank you, Jenny. Making me feel quite relaxed and sleepy there.
I genuinely wish that I had heard this piece yesterday.
Okay, wake up. It's a brand new day. It's Tuesday.
Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a name on you when you change with every new day? Still, I'm gonna miss you.
And as the exhaustion of Monday fades away, you realize that there's another 4 days left of the working week ahead of you, so the Tuesday rants slowly start to burble up through your gullet. So with that spirit in mind, it's time for Desert Island Dicks, where we invite a guest into the studio to tell us who, or what, they will banish to a desert island. And here is the host of Desert Island Dicks, Charlie, still getting to grips with the whole concept of the game Antrobus. Listeners should be aware that the views expressed may contain more adult themes and are personal opinions of our guest. It also seems that Charlie and his guests still need a bit more practice.
Hello and welcome to Desert Island Dicks. My banisher today is the creator of surreal comedy and YouTube sensation Enculturation, writer, comedian and impressively quiffed gent Simon J. Hello, Simon.
That's the correct name.
That is the correct name.
What shall I say as well? Because I've got a not so esteemed radio person.
Well, let's not make this a battle of the self-deprecating comments. Are we allowed to talk over each other in this sphere?
Better if we don't.
Okay, well, I'm glad I'm with the Bournemouth Uni equivalent of David Frost. He'll be professional and know what to do.
I certainly will.
Hooray.
David Frost is my hero.
Is he?
He is.
70s Playboy. Have you seen Frost Nixon?
No.
Have you watched Sunday with Frost ever?
No.
Have you read any books by Sir David Frost?
I didn't know he wrote books.
Well, there we go.
Who is he?
Your hero, David
Frost.
I'm
thinking of someone else. Did we just start speaking at the same time?
Oh, no.
I think we did slightly. It was good practice. Shall we go?
Yes, come on, Charles.
Hi, Simon. Who is your first dick that you would like to banish to the desert island of dicks?
I'd like my first nomination to be a book which is called Dianetics. It's the book from the Church of Scientology. And when I went down to pool to one of these little Scientology places.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I met two very lovely middle-aged women, both with, I think, underactive thyroid glands, but won't hold that against them. I just thought that they were very sweet, loving individuals, but I think they were mixed up in some way, and they delivered this rather odd video in which they said all of life's little problems are because of engrams in our reactive mind.
Engrams?
Yes, it's something that goes into the mind when you are knocked unconscious, and so something bad happens to you, and your mind is taking in all this stuff all the time, and that's what engrams are. They're bad memories. And through auditing, which is a sort of odd, quasi-pseudoscience that they've made up, where they give you a sort of counselling session, and once you've talked through your problem, you are now then known as a clear. And this is all in the book of Dianetics. And these women told me that, oh yeah, you know, cognitive behavioural therapy and psychology, they've only been around since the 60s.
And how long has Scientology been around?
Since the 40s, so it outmodes Sigmund Freud, who's born in 18-whatever.
Since the 40s, yes. So it is much, much older, ancient, in fact, compared to psychology. Now, I've also signed up to Scientology once on the website.
Did you?
And I got harassed by emails. I did walk into the office and I heard some stories about it. But these ladies with their thyroid condition, isn't that just like natural selection?
Why are you going about natural selection?
As the opposite to Dianetics and Scientology, because I'm sure Scientology...
Well, the fact Scientology is a palpable lie, whereas natural selection and evolution is fact.
That's what I was going on about.
Oh, good, okay.
Because Scientologists probably don't believe in natural selection.
Possibly not. They do believe in a creator, which is the alien Xenu, that they put the aliens in a volcano.
So the alien Xenu.
They didn't go on about that though. When we were there, they just said it was just this sort of psychology. Although all the imagery had volcanoes on the front. Yeah.
Anyway,
the funniest thing though, that the Scientology building is above the Slug and Lettuce. So after you've been brainwashed, you can have a lovely platter
and a pint.
Yeah,
for about £2.99.
I think they've gone up now.
So who are you going to put on this Desert Island Disc? The two ladies who were. Sorry. Who are you going to put on the Desert Island Dicks?
I love that crazy look in your eye.
Can I summarise who you're saying? Who are you going to put on the Desert Island Dicks? Those two ladies, the book, the volcano, the whole lot, the leader of the group called...
Xenu? I think because those two ladies are just a brainwashed victim. I don't think they should be punished.
Mm-hmm.
Although Schopenhauer did say that you should compare the people that are suffering to the person causing the suffering, and I'd rather be the person causing the suffering. So even if innocent people get hurt, it doesn't really matter. But I think in this case, I'd have to put just one random member from Scientology, possibly Tom Cruise, possibly, I think, Katie Holmes. Is she still a Scientologist?
Probably, but...
I think a high-profile, lead by example, would take a high-profile Scientologist, put them in the island, and subject them to the Thetans, a part human, part alien race.
Think that was perfectly randomly selected, Tom Cruise.
Thank
from
you.
A list of Scientologists. So what would you put on?
Isn't it funny that Tom Cruise has the same name as the action that he usually does? Isn't that weird? Oh, it was a reference to cruising, don't worry.
Oh, Tom Cruise.
It was quite a clever joke, actually. Should we move
it
on?
Was. No, what are you going to put with Tom Cruise on the Desert Island Dicks?
Well, Charles, my next choice is going to be Conservative Party leader David Cameron.
All right, so you're going to put the Conservative leader party David Cameron. You're not going to put any objects with Tom Cruise?
No.
Like a book or
a
song?
He's the book.
Oh,
he's,
okay,
he's
I
the
see.
Book,
fair enough.
Oh, should I have actually put the book there instead
of
Tom
sure.
Cruise?
I'm not sure. I thought we were going to put things on that. You're right, if it's just a book. Are we actually putting Tom Cruise on the Island of Dicks?
I thought we were.
Okay. Tom Cruise is on the island. Are we going to give him a gift to go to the island with? Something that he would hate having around with him?
Yes, David Cameron.
Okay, then. Carry on, then.
Well, we can...
Explain why you're going to put David Cameron on the Desert Island of Dicks with Tom Cruise.
I can see, as I'm being a bit cerebral about this, when I was meant to choose a book and chose Dianetics, but then put a symbol of Scientology in the form, the corporeal form of Tom Cruise.
That was very cerebral.
Thank you. Well, if I'm going to pick David Cameron, I could pick an image or an object that Tom Cruise is probably familiar with, cocaine. Allegedly, all of his old friends from Eton are in the front bench. That's all proved. Yeah, and he also once went in with, I think, four of the front benches into, I can't remember which restaurant it was in London, and just ripped it apart.
What, the furniture?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
And he ate the ceiling. Allegedly, on the Island of Dicks, I'm going to put a symbol of the new Tories, in effect, is what they are, or Old Labour, David Cameron. And to symbolise David Cameron, I'm putting alleged cocaine...
Yes.
There we are. Because it's actually a good symbol. William Burroughs in the beginning to The Naked Lunch. You read The Naked Lunch, Charles?
I think I have, actually, yes.
Really? Good. He describes that the whole drug culture is like a pyramid. And, of course, to bring it down, you don't go for the top. You don't go for the drug dealer, Cameron. In this analogy, he's not a drug dealer, but in this symbol, he is at the top. We can't get him that way. We have to take all the drug takers away. Because if you remove the bottom rung, you can't see my hand gestures.
Sorry, I forgot. I was supposed to go, mm-hmm.
Good. When you remove... So if we just remove the support, everything comes crashing down. So again, like Tom Cruise, innocent victim, David Cameron is also an innocent victim of being middle class and having to go to Eton. And being, I think he's distantly related to the Queen, which is quite worrying, allegedly.
Very worrying.
Anyway, should we move on to the next one? okay, the film I want David Cameron and Tom Cruise to watch on the Dick Island, as it were, will be the Jonas Brothers in concert.
And why the Jonas Brothers in concert? Quite like them.
I bet you do. There's something of a worry for me, because aren't they all about 12 years old? Of course, you'll never meet the Jonas Brothers, so it doesn't matter.
No, I'm not a very good esteemed DJ.
No, you probably see people like Russell Brand and Chris Moyles. They'll all get to interview the Jonas Brothers. Who you get? Sue Pollard.
Maybe if I'm lucky. She's a bit old and female.
She'll still be around. She's like asbestos.
Jonas Brothers?
Yeah, Jonas Brothers. There's something that is alluring yet repugnant about them at the same time. Like Semtex. There's...
So you do find them alluring?
I find them. They're physically attractive, an aesthetic. They're sort of all sort of curly-haired indie boys, quiet.
Aren't they quite religious?
Yeah, that might... Oh, I've got a call. Can I take my call on the mobile? Will that f*** everything up? I'm just recording at the moment in the studio. Yeah? Okay. Bye.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Where was I? Yeah, the Jonas Brothers.
I've just found out the oldest Jonas brother is 19.
And the youngest is?
Who's the youngest? We'll find out. Seven. Joseph, who is the youngest, is 17.
Oh, well, that's all right then. So they actually are all legal.
Carry on. So they're on the island, Jonas Brothers.
The film's on the island, and they'll have to watch it on a loop.
The music video.
No, just the Jonas Brothers in concert. They made a film in 3D, I think it is, as well. So you can get every dimension.
And why are you putting that with Cameron and... Oh, it doesn't matter. Just put it on the island.
Yeah, just sort of put it on the island. Let's get on with it.
I think the concept's gone changed a bit.
Yeah, no, it isn't. It works. Okay. They've all been put on the island. There's two men on the island and then the Jonas Brothers concert.
Fair enough.
I wanted to put cocaine on the island, but we're not allowed... Okay, well, here's another populist choice. The TV I want, the TV show, and everything just involved with it, the whole lot at London Studios, I want raised from the ground, and they're just transported to the Dick Island.
And what is this show?
It's the show called Britain's Got Talent, which...
The whole gallery cheered there?
Yeah, the gallery. What are the gods? The irony is, you should smell it a mile off. One, it's on ITV. Two, it's got a plastic puppet on the panel. Oh, no, no, let's go. I'll slag off Amanda Holden in a bit. Don't worry. Okay, let's go back to it. You've got two numpties presenting it who used to be in Biker Grove.
Indeed.
You then have...
And they also had a song.
They had a song. Do you remember the song?
Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
Do you want to sing a little bit of it?
Let's Get Ready to Rumble. Let's Get Ready to Rumble. I can't remember the next line, but I do remember it. It was a good song.
Oh, wonderful.
I think they're quite nice little smiley chappies.
No, they irritate. They're great. But the worst thing is that it seems very tabloid television.
Of course, it's ITV.
Well, no, ITV has produced some of the most amazing drama we'll ever see on British television, including Prime Suspect, Cracker, in the early days of Coronation Street. There's amazing things. People who slag off ITV don't know really much about television, but they do have a lot of bad stuff as well, and this is probably its carbuncle, its horrible gangrenous tumour, if mm-hmm. you will, on the side of it.
Can I do another clean? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Because I noticed I've been nodding and you can't nod.
Yeah, you can't nod. They can probably hear a squeak, but time, our constant enemy, yep. always getting the better of us, so I better wrap up this slanging off of Britain's Got Talent.
Yep.
Yeah, Piers Morgan, how did he get a career after, and this has been proved, faking pictures of American soldiers torturing prisoners, wasn't it?
At the Daily Express.
No, he was at the Daily...
Mirror.
Yeah.
He was
Mail.
Editor, Mail.
Let's say the Daily Mail, the Daily Mirror, the Daily Express. Just cut the one in. I think it's the Mirror.
I think it's the Mirror. He got fired. He was editor of...
He got fired for being a criminal, basically. And he should have been arrested and went to prison. Of course he didn't, because he's got a lot of fancy lawyers and got off on a technicality.
And he has done a documentary about people living in Poole.
Fascinating. What an upstanding member of our community. But he's got that horrible, horrible baboon-arsed face. It's sort of pinched and puckered and he's... Oh, he makes me physically sick. And how can he sit in judgment of other people?
He doesn't really judge. He seems to like everyone.
Well, that's probably because he's trying to solve all of the world's problems.
Anyway, what did you want to say about him?
I think that's all I've got, really, on my dick island.
The desert island of dicks.
Yeah, I've got the entire studio of Britain's Got Talent.
Does that include the audience?
That includes the mindless sheep.
And then you've got the 3D version of the Jonas Brothers in concert film.
Amanda can dance with Tom to that as David Cameron snorts derisively in the corner. Thank you. Good evening.
Thank you very much. I put some theme tune on there or something.
Yeah.
Next week on Desert Island Dicks will be another special guest.
Is it going to be Dave Ruddock?
Could be.
Because you can't get anyone else. All right. We're done. That was fun, Charles.
I hope that was all right. Yeah. I was completely unprepared. But...
Well, you were really sweet, actually. I think we could... Can you please leave him doing Let's Get Ready to Rumble?
That's all the time we have on Desert Island Dicks. Thanks once again to our guest, Simon Jay. Join us next week when we'll have another guest banishing the people, things and concepts they revile to our desert island.
Thanks again to Charlie and Simon there, and remember you will also be able to hear Simon in the Friday segment of the program as one of the team captains in the comedy panel show, Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve? We have also been encouraging listeners to tell us who or what they would banish to a desert island through our Facebook page and email address, which, for your own reference, is theweekendlinks@googlemail.co.uk.
That's right, Andrea. And Amy from Winchester has written in, and she's got quite a long list of people she'd like to banish. She starts with celebrities who throw money at third world countries to buy children. She says when the celebrities are too stupid to even look after themselves, let alone a child from another country. She says, give the community a charitable donation, don't remove its future. She also wants to banish Kiss and Tell's wannabes. She says they take up airtime and space on the printed page, and just because they've slept with someone who was once famous, they think that getting their out makes them the victim. And here, a likely person that she liked to send for a life of solitude and plenty of time to think about what they've done might be Abby Titmus. She'd also like to banish people who think they're really cool but are actually really sad. And in this list, she includes Edith Bowman, Pete Doherty and Girls Aloud. She then goes on to say that maybe the desert island could be a form of rehab for those who have clearly lost it. And here, she's thinking of Britney Spears, Kerry Katona and, of course, Susan Boyle.
We've also heard from Tom in London, who says, I would send the creators of TV show Big Brother simply because it invades TV and you can't escape, no matter how hard you try. Why the public like to sit indoors watching other people sit indoors is far beyond my understanding. Failing that, I would send the entire editorial team of The Sun. What a load of tripe. Not quite sure what he's referring to there, but I'm guessing the whole of The Sun's content. Now that we've got all of our whinging out of the way, it's time to forget all your troubles and go to the theatre.
It's time to trust my instincts, close my eyes, and leap. It's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't pull me.
Hello and welcome along to the West End Review. This week we're looking at the hit musical Wicked and how, a year after the cast change, the show is still attracting thousands. An original Broadway musical that tells the untold story of Oz, the London production of Wicked has now attracted over 2 million theatregoers and grossed almost £75 million since opening. Based on the acclaimed novel by Gregory Maguire, Wicked subverts our preconceptions of the characters from The Wonderful Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum, or, more famously, The Wizard of Oz film starring Judy Garland. The focus of the musical is on the two witches, Galinda, played by Diane Pilkington, and Elphaba, played by Alexia Kadeem, who strike up an unlikely friendship at Shiz University and go on to become Galinda the Good and the actually not at all wicked Wicked Witch of the West. Wicked very cleverly contextualises many aspects of the more famous story, including how the Tin Man came to have no heart, how the Scarecrow came to life, and why the Lion had no courage. The story also subtly alludes to what it is like to be an outsider in our society, with the idealistic Elphaba being excluded by her peers due to her green skin. It's obvious that no expense has been spared on the stunning costumes and set design. Couple that with the elaborate dance routines, beautiful songs and outstanding vocal performances from the main characters, Wicked truly is a breathtaking show. It's a show that will please everyone, portraying drama, comedy, love and magic. It's impossible not to fall in love with this production, and the show has attracted many stars, including Mick Jagger and Dr. Stephen Hawking. However, there are a few strands of the plot which are never fully explained, such as why the animals are forgetting how to talk, or how Glinda acquired her magical powers, as shown in the film. Some aspects of the show also contradict with the plot of the original story, such as the fact that the animals are not supposed to talk, and yet the Cowardly Lion is able to. Although these are very minor points that are irrelevant to the enjoyment of the stage show, I can't help but wonder if they bugged Dr. Hawking as well. Lastly, the show lacked any sort of interaction with the audience. With the stage production of Lord of the Rings, for example, or the no longer running Cats, characters such as the orcs or the cats would come out into the stalls. I think the producers of Wicked have really missed an opportunity here, where they could have used the winged monkeys to startle the audiences. Overall, though, Wicked is truly mesmerising and well-deserving of the numerous awards it's won. Join us next week and we'll be talking about the new stage production of War Horse.
First live, no music at all, not even a little bit. Okay, maybe a bit, but not so you'd notice.
Hello everyone,
My name's Jenny and I'm the producer on The Weekend Links for Burst Live. We're a very happy team here at The Weekend Links, but there is one member of our team who has mysteriously disappeared. Her name is Wei. So in memory of our dear colleague, we'd like to take a minute to think about the good times we had with Wei on The Weekend Links, and we have prepared a short musical tribute for her. Wei, if you're listening, this one's for you.
Mana mana. Mana mana. No way, no way. Mana mana. No way, no way. Mana mana. No way, no way. Mana mana. Not today. Don't get pushed with me.
You're listening to The Week in Links. I'm Lou, here with my co-presenter Andrea, and we're terribly thrilled that you've joined us this afternoon.
Yes, and coming up a bit later in the programme, we'll be hearing about the life and times of Sir Alfred Grimble, who died earlier this week. Jenny will be explaining what exactly happened in the European elections, because my Canadian brain can't quite wrap itself around the concepts, and flautist Crystal Zhang will treat us to a performance.
So, lots to look forward to there. Now, as it's Tuesday, it's Cheap Night at the Cinema. And joining us now in the studio, we're very pleased to welcome Richard Berger. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hi. Well, we're going to talk about the film Looking for Eric, which I believe you've been to see. I've seen it too, and so has Andrea. It's a brand new film out in the cinemas last Friday. What's it about and what did you think of it?
Well, it's directed by Ken Loach, and that comes with certain preconceptions. So perhaps you went into it thinking it's going to be sort of gritty social realism or something like that, and it actually isn't. And I think it's very much a departure from one of Britain's best-known directors, really. So it's a slight tale, a kind of romantic comedy with a kind of social edge, I suppose. But it stars Steve Etz, and he plays a postman called Eric. And he's kind of in his 40s, and life's kind of passed him by, and he's estranged from his wife, and he's sort of disconnected from his two sons, who are kind of in teenagers. And he thinks that life's passed him by, and he starts to sort of... He smokes one of his son's spliffs, and he starts to imagine Eric Cantona. Eric Cantona appears as this kind of imaginary friend, some of us, when we were children, perhaps had imaginary friends, but it's unusual for a middle-aged man to have one. But Eric Cantona turns up, but it's very cleverly done as it's an imagined version of Eric Cantona. It's that Eric Cantona that used to give weird press conferences and talking kind of nonsensical kind of parables and things. And this imaginary Eric Cantona takes Eric, the postman, on this sort of journey of rediscovery, and so that he can reconnect with his long-lost love and eventually his children.
So, I mean, Eric is quite key to the whole film. What did you think of Eric's performance in the film?
Well, if we were French, we would think of Eric Cantona as an actor, because he is quite a good actor. He's been in some big films like Elizabeth, but in his own native country, he is something of a seen as someone who was an actor. He didn't really have many caps for the French national team. So we know him because he's Manchester United, but in France, he played most of his football, his best football, outside of his native country. So I don't think it'd be unusual if we were French or continental European people to sort of appreciate that. But I think for us to see him playing a version of himself, and that's the clever thing. He's not really being Eric Cantona, he's being that sort of media-created
version.
The
one that everybody thinks that they saw, the seagulls following the trawler.
Exactly, yes. And there's a great line when Eric, the postman, says, "I'm still trying to work out what you meant by the seagulls."
Right. They refer to that in the film, don't they? I mean, do you think you need to like football to sort of enjoy this film?
I don't think so, although you do see a lot of the goals. There's a lot of sort of stock footage of some blind goals, although Eric Cantona says it's the pass, not the goal, and all this sort of stuff. I think if you are a Manchester United fan, you'd love this film, because it's great to see one of the great heroes of all Manchester United teams. He's up there with George Best and Dennis Law and people like that. But I think actually the film's more about kind of wasted lives and failure, really. It's a film about failure and the consequences of that failure, and perhaps passing that failure on to your children. So yes. I think it has universal themes.
I mean, it wasn't totally a comedy. I think I was expecting something funnier, perhaps from the clips they showed, but it was actually quite poignant at times. And there was one scene where the police, I won't sort of spoil it, I mean, there's a great scene at the end, which obviously I won't tell people about, where everybody comes together to help. But there's also a scene where the police come in, which is actually really shocking, and I thought was amazingly well done. And I've also heard that Ken sometimes... works with actors and they don't know what's going to happen. I'm wondering whether or not, you know, he doesn't always give them the whole script, and I'm wondering which bits of the film possibly, that we didn't know, where the actors didn't know what was happening. Do you think in that part...
I think Steve Yvette's, I've read that Steve Yvette's, who plays Eric the Postman, didn't know what Eric Cantona was going to say, although Eric Cantona had the script.
Okay.
So he was kind of reacting off him in that way, which was interesting. That's very Ken Loachian. But it's a Ken Loach film, so you're going to expect that kind of gritty realism going to be coming through. I mean, this is very light touch for Ken. He started his career in television. He made Kathy Come Home and things like that, and worked with people like Tony Garnett, and this film's written by his long-term collaborator Paul Lafferty. So it is very much a kind of change of direction, perhaps. But it's still full of those sort of social realist films. And the second part of the film, dealing with the trouble that that Eric the Postman's sons have got into, and the fact that the father's going to kind of help his sons out, that's very, very Ken Loach. And you can see all those sorts of ideas that have been in all of his films coming to the surface.
OK, well, I'm afraid we're sort of running out of time now, but would you recommend people to go and see this film?
I think so. If you're a fan of Ken Loach, definitely. If you're a fan of Eric Cantona, definitely. But I think it does have some interesting universal themes which would touch anybody, really.
OK, well, thanks ever so much, Richard, for coming in. That was great. Really interesting. Certainly I saw it and I enjoyed it. It's quite long. It's nearly 2 hours, but I think it's well worth going to see. So thank you very much. Well, as we've been chatting, the Word A Day calendar that Andrea bought me for Christmas has flipped over. The word today is bellicose, by the way, and we find ourselves in... And now it is 12:37 and it's time for the news.
Burst Live News.
Good afternoon, I'm Jenny Aldridge and you're listening to Burst Live News. Over 27,000 global cases of swine flu have now been confirmed in 74 countries. The global death toll now stands at 141. America is the worst hit country with 13,217 confirmed cases, more than double the number of those of the virus in Mexico. In the UK, there are no deaths so far, but over 800 people have caught the virus. Swine flu is a strain of the H1N1 virus, which causes seasonal outbreaks of human flu on a regular basis. Swine flu has now officially caused the first flu pandemic for 40 years. So far, though, most cases of the virus appear to be mild. Most people who develop symptoms of infection have not needed drugs to make a full recovery, according to the World Health Organization. However, it's believed that many cases of the flu have not been detected. In the US, authorities estimate that as many as 19 out of 20 cases will not be officially diagnosed. The new Health Secretary, Andy Burnham, says an additional £6 million has been set aside for the international response.
We now have enough antivirals to treat half of the UK population, with orders to increase that to 80%. We also have orders for 226 million face masks, 34 million respirators, and 15.2 million courses of antibiotics.
The H1N1 virus is said to actually be a mutation of bird flu, swine flu, and man flu. As such, the search for man, bird, pig continues. Indigenous to the Mexican Sierra Madre Mountains, man-bird pig has never actually been seen. He is rumoured to have the torso of a man, talons and wings of a bird, and the head of a swine. The creature is notorious for swooping into farmers' fields and flying away with sheep and other small livestock. There is often no warning other than the sound of oinking in the wind. Scientists believe that if man-bird-pig is found, a more successful vaccine to the latest H1N1 strain can be created. That's all from Burst Live News for now. Join us again for more wholly inaccurate information.
Burst Live News.
Welcome back. You're still listening to The Week in Links, part of Burst Live. Now, don't forget to tune in this Friday to hear our other program, The Third Ear, where the girls will be taking part in Refugee Week, and presenter Sarah will be attempting a technology detox. Sarah lives on her computer. I'm sure she's really thrilled about that task.
Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing that. I'm also looking forward to our collaboration with the team on Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve? Later on in this show. I've got some very important revelations about why there are no songs about Thursday later on. I don't want to spoil it, but they do involve some magic goats, and I didn't even make that bit up.
I'm looking forward to that with some apprehension. But right now, it's Wednesday, and so as Wednesday's Child is traditionally full of woe, we turn to events of a sadder nature and to this week's obituary.
This week saw the sad death of Sir Alfred Grimble, banker, entrepreneur and social reformer, at the age of 81. A grammar school boy with a sense of social justice, he never really left his native Yorkshire, spiritually or physically. Following 3 years at Cambridge, Sir Alfred joined the corporate world of banking, spending the next few years working for Barclays and then Coutts. At the latter, he quickly rose to become head of their international division. In 1952, Sir Alfred returned north to oversee the merger of the York and Harrogate Bank with the Pennine Bank to become the Northern Bank. Sir Alfred remained chief executive of the Northern until his retirement in 1993. It was during this tenureship that he pioneered loans for small businesses, something unheard of hitherto but now commonplace in today's banking world. On one occasion, Sir Alfred explained, "I wanted the small man to be treated the same as the large man, the small business to be treated the same as the large business, all to be treated equally, irrespective of income or type of labour." Privately, he set up the Grimble Foundation and, with his wife Flora, worked tirelessly on projects aimed at helping local poor children. In 1994, Sir Alfred was awarded a knighthood for his work with the foundation and for his services to banking. We caught up with one of his lifelong friends, William Tubbs, and asked him what Alfred had meant to him and to the community.
Alf Grimble, dead is he? I might have known Alf Grimble. You could have seen that coming, couldn't you, with a fellow like that? It was a loan. It wasn't even a gift. It was a loan. I lent him some seed potatoes year before last, and he promised me he'd get them back to me. And now he's dead. I'm not going to get them back now, am I? 24 seed potatoes, and they've probably gone with him. They'll be in the ground. His coffin will be full of potatoes. And I've got nothing. I've got nothing to plant out this spring. That man, if he were alive, I'd finish him off myself. I couldn't believe it when I heard. It gets you right here. You know, you give a man potatoes, seed potatoes. I mean, they were fine. And he said, "I'll get them back to you, Will. I'll get them back to you." And look, he's dead. It really breaks me out, you know. I could have 24 seed potatoes, and they were goodness, they were records. I could have given them to someone else. They could have raised a crop, given me back some more seed potatoes, and now he's taken them with him to his grave. That's what gets me. He was a tight, tight man. 24 of them. I should have given him 12. I should have given him 12 and see how he went with 12. See if he died with 12. He probably would have hung on for another 12 and then died. But no, 24, all in one go. Gone. Just gone. It makes me sick. When's the funeral? Oh, sorry, I'm going to ask to stop. I'll come over upset, you know. You give them to, it's like a friend, you give a man seeds or anything. You know, it's not like a gardening tip that goes on and round. It's a seed potato. I give him two dozen seed potatoes and he's dead. Oh, it breaks me out.
Are you sure we're talking about the right person? This is the bank manager of the Northern...
Oh, Alfred. I'm sorry. No, Alfred was a lovely man. Oh, very nice man, very polite. Oh, he was an upstanding pillar of the something. He was lovely. Oh, very nice. Always very smartly dressed. Yeah, I remember him at the badminton club. He wasn't really built for badminton, to be fair, but he was a polite man. You know, he would always concede a point, even though it strictly would have gone his way. You know, he was just a lovely, lovely man. He used to go bright red. Bright red, and we'd hardly got onto the court. He would be, I'd be worried. I was worried he was going to keel over, you know. But he was such a lovely man, and he wasn't very good, to be honest, at badminton. He rarely hit the thing, but he used to enjoy himself, and he'd have a lovely little smile on his face. I mean, it wasn't a nice face, but it was a lovely little smile, and he was so polite. That's what I liked about him. Mind you, he never gave me that loan for the shed. I needed some money for the shed, and I went to see him, and he was like, it was a different man, you know. I knew him from all sorts of places. I knew him from church, and I knew him from the badminton, of course. I went in there, and I said, "Hello." hello, Alfred. And is it Mr. Tubbs? Will you sit down, please? I hear you make an appointment with me to talk about a loon. And I thought, oh dear, I thought, it's in his all form, he's dressed up and he's got a 3-piece suit on and a tie. You know, I didn't recognise him really. And it was awful. I suddenly felt, you know, you feel like a child, like in an headmaster's study. So I sat down and he said, right, Mr. Tubbs, I understand you want a loan for a shed. And I said, well, yes, Mr. And I didn't know what to call him, and call him Alfred. Anyway, so I said, yes, sir, I would like a loan, please, for a shed, because I don't have the money right now, but I will do. And he said, well, I've looked at your file and I've spoken to my colleagues and we don't think that you'll pay the money back. And I was devastated, really, because I, you know, I played badminton with him every Saturday night for about 3 or 4 years by then. And there he said, I only wanted £200. It's not a lot, really. And I would have paid it back, and I could have paid it back. I just didn't have it right then, and I needed it. You know, I wanted to get the shed up for the seed potatoes. Oh, the bloody seed potatoes! I've got to stop.
Thank you very much.
Lovely Lou Ricketts ending this week's obituary rather abruptly. Next week, will she be forced to murder Peter O'Toole in order to get an equally interesting story? You'll have to wait until then to find out.
Maybe I'll be out to get you. So, as Wednesday is the middle of the week, it is also known as Hump Day, that nearly insurmountable hurdle that lies between you and the second half of the week. Reporter Andy Green and Dr. Edvard Hillary take a look into the health of the nation's youth on this day.
The expression hump day has been around for many years. However, recently, its usage has increased significantly.
Yes, statistics show there had been a tenfold increase in its use.
Wednesdays is called hump day because it is the middle of the week.
Yes, science has proven that if you consider the start of the week to be Sunday, then Wednesday is in the middle. On the other hand, if you consider the traditional working week to be Monday to Friday, then Wednesday is still in the middle.
In order to make sense of this phenomenon, it has been recommended to use your imagination. For the days before Hump Day, picture an incline of a hill. For the days after Hump Day, picture the decline of a hill. Where the incline and decline meet is the peak. This is where Wednesday is situated.
Yes, that is right. Geographically speaking, Wednesday is the summit of the proverbial hill known as the Working Week. This hill must be climbed, straddled, and descended in order to reach the end of the week.
In some cases, the proverbial hill might be easy to cross. For example, it might be nothing bigger than a molehill. At other times, the proverbial hill can be very large indeed, making it hard to get over. If you're having one of these weeks, you could say it's like climbing Mount Everest.
Yes, psychologists have proven that if you're having a particularly tough week, changing your name by Deep Paul will improve your chances of success 2-1, and recommends the most effective name to be chosen is Hillary.
If you're mathematically minded and finding it hard to picture a molehill or Mount Everest, then on graph paper, pencil in X and Y axis, and then simply draw a basic bell curve. Like the word hump, please don't be put off by the curve's name.
Yes, etymologically speaking, it should be noted that the phrase hump day was not originally intended to carry a second, more risque meaning. However, now that we're onto this subject, better give some facts.
Sexually transmitted infections are common in young adults. The proven way to reduce the chances of getting an STI is abstinence, using protection, reducing the number of partners, or practice dry humping. Happy Hump Day!
Yes, librarians agree humping is an ideal way to break the tedium of the week. Have a happy Hump Day!
Thursday morning and the sun is early.
back to the week in Lynx on Burst Live. It's Thursday. Where have you been? We've missed you.
So, this is the week in Lynx, and although in your absence the sands of time have trickled away and we're now into Thursday, we still have a lot of show ahead of us.
This is a true fact. We have the exciting first ever wireless version of the comedy panel show, Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve, a guide to festivals, and I've been putting off telling you this, but towards the end of the show, we have a guide to everything you ever needed to know about procrastination. But for now, Election Thursdays!
Thursday is traditionally the day when the British electorate go to the polls. Both local and European elections were held recently on Thursday the 4th of June, with some surprising results.
If you're like me, you're not even entirely sure how this past election worked. Maybe it's because I'm not allowed to vote in this country. Maybe it's because I'm the youth and it is therefore my job not to know these things. Either way, we spoke earlier to political correspondent Jenny Aldridge so she could explain just what happened.
And now we're here with our political correspondent, Jenny Aldridge. Hello, Jenny.
Hello.
So, can you please explain to me and all of our listeners how European elections work?
Well, the election system for the European elections is a little different to the UK national and local elections because you vote for a party rather than an individual candidate who may or may not represent a political party. Also, with the European elections, your vote really does count, as seats are given based on the proportion of votes a party has received in a given area. The UK has 72 seats in the European Parliament, and this is divided between 12 regions. A region can have anywhere between 3 and 10 seats, depending on the size of that region. The national and local elections, on the other hand, work on a first-past-the-post winner-takes-all system.
What does first-past-the-post mean?
First-past-the-post means whoever has the most votes wins in that area. It's quite a simple method, but someone can gain a seat without having an absolute majority, or even a sizeable majority for that matter, providing they have the most votes.
So how are EU Parliament seats given? How is it different?
In a given region, the allocated seats are awarded using a quota system. The quota is the total number of votes received by a party divided by the number of seats already gained in that region plus one. So if a party has no seats, the number of votes is divided by one, so it stays the same. If a party has one seat already, then its number of votes is divided by two, and so on. This means that the more seats you have already won, the harder it is to gain extra seats, so the overall allocation of seats is more proportional to the number of votes received. Individual people gain seats as parties have lists with all their candidates in an area on. The first seat they win will go to the first name on that list, and the second seat to the second name, and so on. This carries on until a party either has no more candidates or there are no more seats to give out.
But why should the average person, who doesn't really know a lot about politics anyway, care about European elections? What does that have to do with our day-to-day lives?
Well, firstly, 75% of all UK law comes from the European Union. For example, an EU law has recently come in that stops mobile phone companies charging you too much for using your phone whilst you're in another European country. Secondly, the European Parliament has the power to veto about half the spending plans of the EU Commission. That's the decision-making body of the European Union. So, indirectly, you can have a say in how EU funds are spent, as your preferred candidate, if they gain a seat, of course, will be discussing these matters in the EU Parliament.
So what do the results of the recent European elections mean with regard to UK politics?
Well, I'm sure we've all seen the headlines. European and local elections are often used as an indicator as to how the national elections will turn out, and Labour are said to have suffered their worst election defeat since World War II, as they were beaten into third place by UKIP. Labour gained just 15.3% of the votes in the European elections, and this was also the first national elections that saw the BNP gaining seats in Parliament. Not a very good forecast for the House of Commons.
How on earth did the BNP gain seats and where did they gain them?
The BNP, or British National Party, gained seats in the regions of Yorkshire and Humberside and also in the northwest of England, which is the party leader Nick Griffin's region, so he's now a member of the European Parliament.
It's not clear if they would have gained seats if the EU elections used the first-past-the-post system, but both Labour and the Conservatives have condemned the result as a sad day for British politics. The new Health Secretary, Andy Burnham, said the BNP is like the ultimate protest vote, and voting for them is how to deliver a two-fingered salute to the government. So perhaps their gain in votes is reflective of how the public feel about the main parties in general, particularly with the recent expenses scandals.
I think maybe it's also true that people are a bit fed up of the government's quite relaxed attitude towards immigration. And the BNP portray themselves as being quite a reasonable party who wants stricter controls over immigration. So particularly with the credit crunch and lots of people losing their jobs at the moment, maybe people are starting to think, well, why can't I get work in my own country, but immigrants can? So perhaps their vote for the BNP is they want tighter controls, but they're not necessarily racist themselves, even if most of the people who actually run the party probably are.
That's all the time we have, I'm afraid. Jenny, thank you very much for making this issue a little more clear.
Thank you. Yes, thanks again there, Jenny. After this, why there are no songs about Thursdays.
You're listening to Burst, Bournemouth's internet radio station.
Joyful tidings to you. This is The Week in Links, and I'm Andrea Miller, here with my esteemed co-presenter, Lou Ricketts. Right now, we've got an investigative appeal by an individual who is clever, talented, funny, attractive.
She's talking about herself.
Yes, I am. And now, to me.
Good afternoon. This is Andrea Miller. You may remember me from 5 seconds ago, when I did the link to this piece. One of my many jobs here at The Week in Links is jingles producer. I seek out the songs that you hear at the beginning of each day's segment. And during my research, I made a marginally surprising discovery. Every songwriter who has ever lived is lazy. While there are so many songs about boozing on a Saturday, sleeping in on a Sunday, or being sad that it's Monday, Thursday, more than any other day of the week, has been almost entirely shunned. The selection of Thursday songs was so dire that we had to use this.
Thursday morning and the sun is early. Thursday morning and the trees are singing.
At the top of the segment. This is a preposterous song. I was also forced to commandeer other songs to try and shoehorn them in as the Thursday theme.
It's just another manic
Thursday.
Wish you would.
Thursday.
That's my
Thursday. So why haven't musicians done any better? Presumably it's not the rhyming scheme. Is there a sect of Thor-worshipping acolytes who don't want vapid pop stars appropriating the name of their lord? Or maybe Douglas Adams just got it right in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. People never quite can get the hang of Thursdays. It's too far away from the drudging misery of a Monday or Tuesday, lacks Wednesday's distinction of being the exact middle of the week, or more dubious distinction of being hump day, and it's not close enough to Saturday to stare at the window planning your weekend instead of doing work. In terms of identity, the best Thursdays can muster is the day before Friday. But even with this significant handicap that Thursday has to contend with, I'm confident that these songwriters are just being lazy. If you think of Thursday as the day before Friday, then you can also think of it as Friday Eve. You know, like Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. Maybe Robbie Burns missed a trick writing lyrics for Auld Lang Syne, a song sang once a year, when he could have written one sang once a week. I'm sure his heirs feel that way too.
Hanging around, nothing to do but frown. Rainy days,
Thursdays
always get me down.
My friend Bonnie attributed the lack of Thursday songs to the fact that nothing good ever happened on a Thursday. But if that's true, where are the country songs moaning that, my woman left me, my dog ran away, you know that it happened on a Thursday? There's nothing like that. I mean, this is a date named for the Norse god Thor. We all know that he's the god of thunder, but did you know he had a magical boomerang hammer and, wait for it, a chariot pulled by goats that, when he got hungry, he would eat. Then when he was ready to leave, he'd bring the eaten goats back to life to start pulling him along again. Imagine the life of those goats. Pulling along an ungrateful and truly massive supernatural being, but dreading the point when you got tired. Because did you get to stop? Oh no. He'll stick you on a roasting spit and then start the entire process all over again. There's gotta be a song in there somewhere. And thunderstorms. They're dramatic and offer great words that rhyme with rain, like pain, proclaim, disdain. Storms bespeak passion and heartbreak, and John Cusack standing in the rain holding a boombox over his head, proclaiming his everlasting love for you. Songwriters, this cannot be so hard. I challenge you to write me a Thursday song. Then send it in to us at theweekinlinks@googlemail.co.uk. I've even written one, and I'm sure that you can do better. A lot better. It was my first ever attempt at song composition, and I think it's safe to say that I won't be leaving my job as Jingle's producer anytime soon. And yet, despite outright reluctance from our producer Jenny, here it is now. Play it, Jenny!
I wake up in the morning, check the calendar, to find out it's a day I simply can't afford. Don't know what they were thinking in the days of yore, to name a weekday after the Norse god Thor. Oh, it's Thursday, bloody Thursday. I never quite got the hang of Thursday.
Thursday.
Oh,
yeah. Friday's charmed. Hard luck is her brother. Friday's child. Her sister's misery. Oh, Friday's child.
Hello and welcome back to the Week in Links. And now we've finally got there, it's Friday! Traditionally the night of huge laughs and massive fun. And so we bring you our panel show, Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve? It's the radio spin-off of the highly popular televised Bournemouth University panel show, Ooh, Have I Touched a Nerve? And on the panel tonight are Simon Jay, Charlie Antrobus, Dave Ruddock and Aaron Ferguson. And your host is Jojo Barton. So sit back, relax, and enjoy half an hour of comedy and mayhem.
And what are the other two?
David Cameron.
Marry and throw off the cliff, is it?
Yeah, I'd marry Gordon Brown.
Marry Gordon Brown.
I think you're more of a Cameron boy.
Yeah, I think I'm more Cameron. My cousin went to Eton, so...
Did he? Imagine throwing David Gordon Brown off a cliff, though. That's the mess
Gordon
that would be
Brown.
Made.
The cliff.
No!
I think
well,
he's actually all right,
when we're
Gordon
all
Brown.
Up to our knees in the shit
on.
With the Tory administration, you'll be crying back to the grave of Gordon. You'll be going, why, Gordon, why?
Am I just talking about
it
anything?
Was my sound test.
Okay. Darlings, and welcome to Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve? The audio spin-off of Ooh, Have I Touched a Nerve? Nerve TV's world-famous comedy panel show, attracting audiences of up to tens of people. And now we're on the Burst Radio, attracting another 10 people. Tonight, we're going to be casting a nostalgic glance back at the year gone by here at Bournemouth University. It's been a very odd year. Now, tonight we are lucky to be joined by two not quite so esteemed radio DJs who will be easing us into the world of the wireless. With Simon J tonight is Burst's very own Charles Antrobus. And with Aaron Ferguson is Nerve's best male, David Ruddock. Now, before we get started, I need each panel to decide on a team name and write it down on the paper provided. Simon, shall we start with you?
Yes, well, I was thinking this afternoon that considering we are men of the 21st century and not shy to proclaim no more out ourselves as one confirmed homosexual and one particularly ambiguous one, that we'd be called 1.5 gays.
I like that. Nice easy one this time. 1.5 gays.
And spell it with an I, with a little heart.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and Aaron, what have your team decided on?
Well, we decided to represent the transition to radio in our name and your love for not having complicated names to read out.
Thank you.
So we've gone for Aggressive Vegetables north of St Canterbury's Dalston Flats, somewhere near the Tesco Metro with the half-price pink wafers.
I got... Okay. That's great.
Shouldn't you give JoJo
the
paper?
I got Tesco in that, so I'll just write you as Tesco.
Tesco Metro.
Tesco Metro.
That'll do.
I like that.
Thank you.
Okay. I might have to ask you to repeat that at some point for the show.
Tesco Metro.
Metro for now.
Yeah. Is that legal for broadcast?
We'll make it. We'll look
You're plugging Tesco Metro.
Oh, I don't
got their sales will go down.
Well, then...
Okay. Thank you for that, guys. We've got 1.5 gays and Tesco Metro. And to make it all worth sitting through, each team captain will have to carry out a forfeit at the end of this two-parter in the inevitable event that one of them loses. Simon, would you like to tell Aaron what his forfeit will be?
Yes, and this is entirely spontaneous. That, yes. Well, Aaron, you do know that your favourite ever show...
Genetic Affairs.
Thank you. ...has been transcribed here into loving text. And should you lose this evening, you will have to read about the delights of Anna and Daddy. Oh. Yes, a lot of you don't know what this involves, but you certainly will if he loses.
Surely that's not radio legal.
I don't think so. Oh. We'll see what happens, shall we? And Aaron, would you like to tell Simon what his forfeit is?
Very ironic, given your big David Cameron rant before we started. I have here a contract for you to sign that says... No one can see it, obviously, we're on the radio, don't know why. But which says that in the next possible election, you shall vote for the Conservatives.
You vote on yourself, Simon.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
I think they're quite fair forfeits there.
Yeah, I've got one that's not going to be done and me voting for the Conservatives.
Just to clarify, the points from this episode will carry on over to next week, so remember to tune in then to hear the forfeits get carried out. Right, so we begin with round one, otherwise known as What's the Story, in which we play our teams a snippet of a university-related audio news and ask them, what's the story? Okay, guys, listen up, here's your clip.
Some people have suggested the idea that I get naked with my camping, but that's really not going to happen. What is going to happen is I'm going to tell you why you should vote for Hannah Wright, that's me, for your Vice President of Communications. You may recognise me from other areas of uni, such as working in Dillon's, or volunteering in the SU with the hub or rag, or maybe even washing my hands in the toilets. But if you don't know me, then I want to help you as well.
Never heard of her.
Why was she washing her hands in the toilet?
She's actually won, hasn't she? She's going to be the taking over from Adelaide next year.
Have they announced a winner?
A winner for the student union?
Yeah, there was
when did that happen?
There was fireworks, wasn't
it? When there was
no
an election.
Idea. I haven't voted yet. I thought it was still going.
It's too late to vote now.
Do you know her?
No, I don't know.
I do know in that video that you can hear the balloon bouncing around. Someone's throwing a balloon in her face for no apparent reason, and she's ignoring it.
Maybe it's an act of mercy.
Oh, right, okay.
Hannah Wright is not in the audience, is she?
Why? How did you know that? Why was a balloon being thrown in her face?
I don't know.
I think it was a visual gag.
I saw this too, to show that she can cope in stressful situations.
Yeah.
Maybe. A balloon in your face.
It's not quite war.
That's hilarious.
It's a step up from egging, I think.
Towards war.
Yeah, it is.
It's a bit worrying that the next lot we've got in seemed a bit frivolous and fancy-free. That'll all be sucked out of her in a couple of weeks of administration. That's what I'm looking forward
to. You'll see to that, Simon.
Dead, sallowed-faced people that
appear in
the
student union. What role did she get? Is she president?
No, she's vice president. It didn't mean anything.
Who's president, then?
It's James Ritchie, I think I'll have you know. Yes, the new... more attractive president of the student
union. Did you vote for him?
I did not vote for him. I voted for the ugly one. And
why was that?
Because I can't.
You felt pity.
Yeah, no. It was the fact that I can't serve under someone who's attractive. I think that it's difficult. You should always have a leader that, I don't know, has a slight squint or a dead
like
eye.
Gordon Bray.
Yes, thank you. A little plug there. He needs it.
Would you ever run for president, Simon?
God help us all.
I don't know, maybe, perhaps.
Shotgun being your vice president.
No.
Your logic, he's ugly then? No, I don't know.
That's your logic though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be serving under myself, would I?
Exactly. I think it could work. Okay. So, yes, you were right. This is the story that James Ritchie won the Subu elections this year and will be taking over from Fred Ruffle in September. And on an almost related note, which controversial British party won a seat in the European elections this week?
I wonder who that could be.
The BNP. Just more points that way, you know, so I win.
Was it the Tories? Please say.
Simon's already guessed it.
Sorry.
The ones that get it's great turning on the news and it's going, the headlines tonight, pelted with eggs. Something very melodramatic, but it's a very sad state of affairs when the BNP can get
pelted with eggs. Yeah, and not bricks.
Yeah, I mean most leaders have been pelted with eggs at some point. I mean, this is great. They always show a little montage of egg throwing.
I've never seen Hitler pelted with eggs before.
No, that's something there was none about during the war.
Yeah.
The Nazis banned them.
He boiled
the chickens.
I think he meant
off.
More rationing.
Yeah.
Both the Nazis banning chickens.
No more chickens.
Okay.
When you were talking about James Rich, though, he missed out his cock.
What do you want to say, Simon?
He's going to be the first president of the Students' Union to have pierced genitalia that we know of, because it was revealed on a previous Ooh show that the lovely lady sitting on your left, right, what's her name?
Jen, yeah. Kim,
Jen.
Something with three letters.
Yeah,
brutally forgotten.
Female, the chromosomal loop would suggest. so we got to find some way of making this known. Maybe if we just sort of slip a bit of fishing wire down his pants or something, pull him along, I don't know.
run it in with a
magnet. Get one of those metal detector guys from the beach to come along.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And this.
Or you could just ask him if
it's true.
Apparently it's true. He gets out in lava, that's what she said.
Does he wash it in lava? Because lava sounds like...
Does she wash it for him in the toilet?
It's the nightclub, not the actual lava material. That would just be painful.
Just letting a little bubble around that, Charles. Did you hear that silence at that wall? Yeah, okay, good.
Which brings us to round two. Otherwise known as the storyteller, in which we put our panellists' storytelling skills to the test. I'm going to give each panellist a series of random words and ask them to create a story using those words. We'll pick up them out beforehand, and the buzzer will signal when you move on to the next word. The points go to the funniest and bestest stories, and in honour of the radio, we're going to ask them to do it without repetition, deviation, hesitation, masturbation, and every time you do, the points will be deducted. Okay, Charles, let's start with you. Here are your words. I'd like to tell you what your words are.
Vinegar, custard, moon, broth. Right then. Once upon a time, I was walking along and I went left at the doorknob street and picked up some vinegar from the vinegar shop. It was a mild red vinegar and I poured it into my eye because I was feeling a bit bad because I recently split up with an ex-boyfriend of mine because he was going to the shoe shop. And he went to the shoe shop and he had custard in his socks when he took his socks off. It's most embarrassing. I'm sorry, I'm trying to do that camp gay thing, which I can't do very well because I'm the other half, I think. But when I was going backwards to the moon, looking at Earth...
masturbation.
Was there.
Clearly.
And I was going backwards to the moon and there's some broth. This has gone horribly wrong. Broth was coming out of the exhaust. That's why I was going backwards to the moon, to confuse the aliens so they couldn't see me coming.
Masturbation!
Obviously. There you go. That's four words
that's
done,
that.
By the way.
Thank you, Todd. Well done. Right.
What was that whole camp thing in the middle? What was that? I can't see limp wrists on the radio. I can hear them, though.
That was very bad.
Maybe we can retake it. Teach them how to be camp.
That won't be used.
Okay, Simon. Here's your word, Simon.
Four words.
Pass them over to you.
Four words.
There you go.
Okay. My words are... glipped, fungus, proplas, Joseph. Right, okay.
Oh, yes, Joseph in the audience has just clapped by himself. Bless.
Not like we know everyone in the
I'm
audience.
I'm ready when you are, people. Yeah, and shall I begin now? Yes?
Yes, go.
Okay, yes. The Virgin Mother, otherwise known as Mary, was a very clipped-tongued individual. She spoke very well, even in the original Hebrew, which is actually very difficult to do, as it has lots of difficult sibilants. But she always manages to carry herself good in dinner conversation, except when she accidentally left out the cheese and there was a lot of fungus on it. She would then employ a very early Judean method, which is scraping it with the horseshoes of camels. This would then add to the proplas that wasn't invented then. They used a sort of early derivation of it, which included...
hesitation!
Yes. It did include... Actually, no, it wasn't hesitation, because it did include shit. And then Joseph came home from the dog races later and gave her a good old belting, because I think he's been terribly misrepresented as he was in the Bible, because I think he was actually a wife beater.
Well done, Simon! That was pretty good, pretty good. No hesitations apart from one, but that knows very well. Okay.
Thank you.
Well done, well done. Okay, now David, I believe you're next. Mm-hmm. I'll just get your four words for you. We've had that one there.
Lovely.
Here we go. If you'd just like to read your words out,
okay.
And then begin when you're ready.
I have... what?
Period.
Oh, period. I beg your pardon, I don't usually read the word much. Gingerbread, Ribena, and Corporal.
Dog.
Good Lord, shall I start?
When you're ready.
Okay. Last week, when I was on my period, I went to the doctor to ask him why, as a man, I was having my period. I was hoping I could still have babies, but he was unsure. Owing to the fact that I didn't have a gingerbread man in my cupboard, which would have helped certainly with conception. Because I was very sweet, and my gingerbread man helped me with my sweetness. He also enjoyed Ribena, which was a substitute for... which, in fact, it helped him stop beating me up because he was actually an alcoholic. And I put him onto the Ribena to stop him beating me up from his time in the army when he was a corporal. And he was molested by another gingerbread man who drank Ribena, which was laced with scotch, which, of course, led to his alcoholism when he was on his period.
Okay. Very well done. I think, yes, we probably went round a bit too long, but that's an interesting story.
That's
the loop.
The next children's class. Yeah.
Harry and his period.
The Gruffalo in.
Oh, the I ginger... love the Gruffalo.
You're going to love your Ribena.
10th anniversary special.
Oh.
Really?
Okay.
Ooh. And a ribbon.
Maybe
we should
like pass those to Aaron, and if you could read his words out and begin when he's ready.
Oh, exciting! Sheep, beetroot, choir, and socket. So I was good friends with a sheep my mother bought for me for my 6th birthday, who's been with me since my 6th birthday and lasted until now. Her name was Marilyn. But sadly, Marilyn the sheep died recently. It was quite an upsetting experience here. We went to Thorpe Park and Marilyn the sheep decided to buy some beetroot. But it turned out Marilyn was allergic to beetroot and kind of started having the shakes and frothing at the mouth and kind of doing this. And everyone was just like, whoa, that's not the sort of noise which should be coming out of a sheep. And so we got really concerned. But we decided Marilyn had a future in the choir making a noise like that. So we put her in the choir and there she was going... And it just made the choir sound brilliant. But sadly, it began to strain her vocal cords. She started to kind of... She was getting hurt and she fell over, rolled into an electrical socket and got electrocuted, sadly. And that's when she died, right there and then, after being in a choir and rolling into an electrical socket. She exploded. It was a sad experience. It was in the middle of a church ceremony. Children cried, and that's the end, really.
Yeah. That's really sad! Bless you. Well, that's very good, guys. Thank you very much for that. And the scores at the end of round one and round two combined are 1.5 Gays have 600 points, and Tesco Metro have 550 points. And now we come to round three, affectionately known as Lost in Translation. In this round, we're going to play our panellists one half of a phone call from Bournemouth past, and it's the captain's job to fill in the gaps before their teammates work out what the heck were they talking about. Okay, Simon.
Okay.
Here's your phone call.
I'm picking up. Hello?
Hi, Simon. It's Gio here from the Students' Union, also known as Subu. You okay?
No, I'm not Gio. I have a terribly inflamed scrotum at the moment. I got kicked in the proverbial area this morning whilst getting my morning paper.
That's great to hear. I was trying to ask you whether you're still up for dressing as Batman tomorrow.
Well, I suppose so. I think it's for a charitable cause and... Donkeys in crisis or something. What's the problem? I mean,
well, I'm sure I could lend you a pair of my pants if you wanted them.
Is this just a reference to your latent homosexuality coming out here? I think it is, isn't it? I made no offer for a pair of underwear. In fact, I have my own underwear. Actually, no, I don't. I lost a pair of underwear. This is true. I actually lost a pair of underwear. So
I'm bringing in a load of spare pants, just in case anybody wants to wear them.
Oh, that's good. Aren't you a very kind, giving, generous man?
I think somebody else is bringing the camera.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. I'm very happy to know.
Okay, well, I'm going to go. Yeah, there's a wild bear that wants to talk to me.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Simon. See you tomorrow. Bye.
Okay, well done. So, I guess you have to kind of guess what...
Well, do we have to guess what our conversation was?
That's right, isn't it? That's right,
fancy
yeah.
dress, and maybe for charity or not... I reckon it's something to do with dressing up in pants.
Yeah, it's like charity.
So it must be to do with Superman, and therefore seeing how many Supermen you can fit in a room.
It's a rag week thing.
Superheroes. Let's broaden it out and then get it completely 100% right.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much right. It was
what a relief.
Superhero world record attempt when everybody had to dress as whatever superhero they wanted and all come together and try and break the world record. So, yes, well done, well done.
What's the one-eyed bear reference?
I have no idea, actually, what
I think
that's
that
about.
Sounds wonderful.
Gordon Brown forgot to shave.
Yeah. Well done, guys. Okay, Aaron, Here is your telephone call.
It's a bit of a visual gag,
yeah,
but he's
no
picking
one can
up the
see
phone.
Why it's funny. Hello.
Hello, is that Aaron Ferguson?
Yes, it is. Hello, how are you? What can I do for you?
We're just calling you about that nude calendar you bought from us last week.
Oh, what, the SpongeBob special edition?
Yeah, that's the one. I'm the one before I left in February. Can you see me?
Yeah, I like what you've done with the goat. That's interesting.
Yeah, we had to take that photo 3 times.
Really? That sounds awful. Why so long?
Anyway, the reason I'm calling you is because we've had to recall all of the calendars.
Oh, no, is that something to do with the goat? What's going on? Nothing serious, I hope.
Maybe it's because we missed one of the testicles during the Photoshop.
Oh, God, really? Well, what slipped through?
Yeah, we let a ball in.
Oh, OK. Well, I suppose I can bring it back to the shop in a couple weeks, maybe.
I'm not going to tell you where it is.
I need to know where the shop is. Well, do you want to come round here, then? We'll have cheesecake or something, maybe a bit of a chat.
Mr. Ferguson, please, that's disgusting.
I'm afraid it's just cheesecake. I meant it quite innocently, madam.
I'm going to hang up now.
OK. Well, are you at least going to tell me where the shop is so I can bring the calendar in?
Fine, keep the calendar. And if you want to know, the balls are on top of June.
Bye, then. That one, hilarious. That was fantastic.
That went really well together. That was very entertaining. But can you tell me, David, or either of you, what she was talking about?
Nude calendars.
I have a theory. I've noticed there's a new shot of the boating society of a naked woman paddling a load of naked men. It's true. She's paddling, or she's threatening to. She's got a wry smile on her face, so I think she's about to.
What's this, a calendar you've seen, or what?
It's just one shot of a calendar.
What do you mean by paddling?
As in, she has the oar, and she's about to smack them on the behind.
Oh, okay.
Not paddling.
I thought rowing. Yes. I thought it was rowing.
Well, you can call it that if you want.
Okay, fantastic. Well, at the end of that round, guys, 1.5 Gays has 800 points, and Tesco Metro have caught up and got 1,000 points. And we end with a quick fire round, where I will ask our teams a series of questions against the clock. This is your last chance to make up for all the points you're lacking in. All questions are related to the past. Sound your buzzers when you think you know the answer. But failure to give an answer right away will result in the question being passed over to the other team. You have 2 minutes. Your time starts now.
June.
Okay, 200 points deducted. Who was elected as Vice President representation for the second year running? Simon.
Scott Bellamy.
Well done. Which celebrity were we all told to boycott and Costa Coffee emails?
Anthony Costa.
Well done. Approximately how many people voted in the student union election?
1,398.
But we got there first.
2,400.
1,000? No, incorrect. name the musical that the performing arts is...
Guys and Dolls.
Well done. Which Britain's Got Talent contestant got to perform her song again after...
Susan Boyle. No, the little girl. Fuck.
Incorrect.
Is it the little girl?
I'll give you that.
Hey!
Which virus nearly killed us all?
Swine flu!
We banged first.
I banged first. Believe
okay,
me.
You shook first.
Okay.
We banged first.
Okay, neither of you will get that point. Which popular music show was brought back for a Christmas special?
Stop the Pops. That was in stereo.
Monos to me.
Bum, bum, bum. At which position did Britain end up in at this year's Eurovision contest? Incorrect. David.
Has that happened yet?
That's so many half a gay, you see. This is what happened.
I was supposed to
it was
add to that.
Fifth. Yeah. What is the name of Barack Obama's dog?
Chester, Checkers. That's Richard Nixon, sorry.
Incorrect.
Reginald.
Snuffles.
No.
George.
Bo. Which Radio 1 DJ was accused of being homophobic?
Chris Boyles.
Correct. Jonathan Ross made it back to Radio 2, but under what conditions?
His show is pre-recorded.
Well done, David. Clement Freud sadly passed away early this year, but who was his famous grandfather?
Clement Freud.
Who?
Sigmund Freud. Who said what happened there?
The father of...
The grandfather
thing. Oh, I see.
Well done, guys.
This is tense, isn't it?
Okay. And so, I can tell you the scores at the end of the show are 1.5 Gays have 1,600 points
and Tesco Metro have 1,800 points. So, congratulations to tonight's winners, Tesco Metros, and commiserations to our losers, 1.5 gays. Remember, all the points earned this episode will be saved up until next week, before the eventual loser will have to carry out their forfeit at the end of the show. So, who will it be? Will Simon J be forced to walk the plank of shame? Will Aaron Ferguson be made to sit on the naughty step? Will being on Burst Radio make any difference to our viewing figures at all?
No.
Tune in next week to find out. That's right, darlings. Ooh, have I burst a nerve is to be continued.
When they ask a question, what conditions did Jonathan Ross go into work in? I did say sunshine, but no one actually heard that.
Even if they did, it wouldn't matter.
It's funny, though.
Oh, you're all friends, really.
Oh, poor Charlie. I was there at the recording, but I'm still impressed at how funny the team from Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve are.
I agree. So tune in next Monday to hear the next edition of Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve. Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve was written by the show's producer Scott Payne and Jojo Barton, and the script was edited by Ben Nardoni. Scott Payne is also the creator of the game. The show's engineers were Nuria Bernardo and our very own Andrea Miller. Well, we're at Saturday, and this is the time of the year when the weekends are filled with festivals. It's one of the greatest ways to spend your weekend. There are festivals for every kind of music, every kind of interest, every age. They are all based around like-minded people getting out there and taking time to share their interests. Our Saturday is devoted to three items on festivals. First, we have Andrea with her report from One Big Weekend.
Which, I do warn you now, does contain some high-level whinging and a smug sense of self-satisfaction. But after me, we have an actually helpful guide to cheap festivals from Jenny Aldridge. And Charlie Antrobus wants you to ride your bicycle with him to the Glastonbury Festival this year.
My name is Andrea Miller. I am 24 years old and I have never been to a music festival. I woke up at 5:23 in the morning to be here in a cold tent. I'm tired, I am a little bit sick, and I'm pretty sure it's going to get cold soon. But hey, we're at One Big Weekend, it's free, so let's see if I can have a good time.
Never been to a festival? You may be thinking, Andrea, how could you have lived nearly a quarter century without enjoying your favorite bands, drunken revelry, and those tiny donuts they sometimes have all in one place? Surely the vast wilderness that I imagine Canada to be has a field large enough to host such an event. Well, we do. And we have. Not the cornucopia of festivals the UK boasts, but festivals nonetheless. I've neglected to attend festivals in the past for a few key reasons. 1. I hate being wet. As it is a rule that it must rain at every festival, anywhere in the world, the idea of being wet for days at a time is unappealing. I may wallow, but not in the mud. 2. I'm not a big drinker. And when you're sober as everyone else is descending into drunken idiocy, your tolerance for fellow members of the human race plummets. Plus, I have misanthropic tendencies and don't like loud noises. 3. Cost. Really, the main barrier between me and festival fun, I'm thrifty at the best of times, so the idea of spending £160 to do anything other than pay my rent is a bit of a stretch. That's 300 Canadian dollars. And after that, they have the nerve to check your bags to ensure you enter snackless and must therefore purchase the overpriced, overprocessed food on offer? Do I look green? I'm not made of money, people. So keeping all this in mind, when I attended Radio 1's big weekend, I felt very much like a stranger in a strange
I've just stood through my first set, Dizzy Rascal. First impressions, loud. Lasting impressions, loud, and I can hear a little less. I'm afraid festival life may not be for me.
First performance of the day, and I'm clearly determined to have a good time. Now, one of the things that I found puzzling is that the open air stage blasted DJ music, which is fine, but it bled into every other tent where there were real bands playing.
I can only hear the other stage. I can still just hear the outdoor stage. I can't actually hear the live band. I don't feel very live, and now we're going into the crowd and I'm scared. We're holding hands like elephants.
Stop!
Taking part in another essential festival experience. I'm in a port-a-loo, and it's not good. There's toilet paper everywhere, and there's a giant mysterious lever that I'm pretty sure if I were to pull it, I would somehow be ejected out into the field. Can still hear everything rattling as well.
Throughout the entire day, I couldn't help feeling like an outsider. Nothing is more alienating than being at a concert where everyone knows the words to every song, while you're at best passingly familiar with the band. Exhausted, I sat in the grass outside one gig while my friends went inside, ecstatically excited to see a band I had never heard of. I couldn't shake the feeling of being an anthropologist examining a foreign land. And after counting the 18th man peeing against the fence beside me, I began to despair slightly. I decided to go for a walk around the festival site. In my wanderings, I caught sound of something that made me very happy. An acoustic guitar.
Just ask you, why did you bring an acoustic guitar to the festival?
Just to get drunk and play guitar.
Yeah? I've got to say, it's a little bit more to my taste than a lot of what they're playing today.
Aye, this is a lot of shape that they're playing here.
Is that why you brought your guitar, really?
Yes.
Why did you come?
Because I work here. Hey, can I play one of my songs then?
I can't tell. I don't need you anymore. Taking far too much of it now. You are too wonderful. I don't know what keeps you going. Is it beat or is it rhyme? You stole away my heart's desires. You've been lying all this time. Ah, but still I'm unbroken. Well, at least I've awoken. Well, I've been sleeping for years now. I
kind of spice through my tears now. You can drag some other tar right through the dust.
Listening back, I can think of a fourth reason why I don't go to festivals. Four, I'm a whiner. I'm so grateful to my friends for not slapping me in the face and telling me to suck it up. Once I finally did, admittedly after being heavily medicated, I ended up having a pretty good time, and I'm glad I went. That said, I'm not sure whether I would go to another festival, especially one that lasts for a week rather than a day. Well, not until someone pays me to.
Drag some other song right through the dust, and you can turn their heart into rust. Oh, you can drag some other song right through the dust, and you can turn their heart into rust.
Oh, that's great!
That isn't even on.
What was the song called?
Some Other Sod.
Did you write that?
I did die. Let me see that.
That was fantastic. No, yeah, it's working.
How is it working?
Yeah, it's just all internal. Sorry, what was your name?
Stephen Kelly.
Thanks very much, Stephen Kelly. It's good to meet you. Thanks.
You're listening to Burst.
Okay, so it's June and the festival season has officially started, but what do you do if you're a bit strapped for cash and can't afford to go to any of the main festies? Well, never fear, because cheap festivals are in abundance this year. Perhaps that's one of the few positives of the credit crunch. If comedy and drama is your thing, Fringe Sunday, as part of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, takes place every year on the Meadows and intends to give a free taster of the entire festival. Closer to home, the Thames Festival in London, dubbed as the biggest end-of-summer party, takes place on the 12th and 13th of September, and it features music, art installations and workshops. Also in September, Brighton showcases the city's vibrant music scene in over 20 venues across the city as part of the Brighton Live Festival. This year, they're also aiming for an outdoor stage and gigs in the most unlikely of places. The Devon Rock and Bike Show is also worth attending. It costs just £9 for a weekend ticket, including camping, and it features live rock bands, custom bike shows, and an auto jumble. If you've a little spare cash, Hard Rock Calling in London's Hyde Park costs just £45. It's a one-day event on the 26th of June and features acts such as Bruce Springsteen, Neil Young and the Fleet Foxes. Lovebox Weekend, also in London, features seven stages and even a fun fair. Set in Victoria Park, Lovebox Weekend is primarily a dance festival but also plays host to reggae, indie and pop acts. A weekend ticket will set you back just £75. That's half the ticket price of the mainstream festivals. Lastly, Camp Bestival, set in the grounds of Dorset's Lulworth Castle, costs just £45 for a day ticket or £100 for a weekend ticket without camping. Camp Bestival is Bestival's little sister, and confirmed acts so far include Roots Maneuver, Will Young and Mercury Rev, along with loads of other artists, DJs and comedians. Of course, if you really can't afford to go to any of our recommended cheap festivals, you could always camp in your garden with your friends and play some CDs. But no one really does that, do they?
You're listening to Burst, Bournemouth's internet radio station.
Hello, are you going to Glastonbury? How are you getting there? Would you like to share a ride with me? Yes, you heard it right. Let's cycle. I want to ride my bicycle. Let's get a group of us together. We could get a van to support us, carry our luggage and stuff. We can take it easy, enjoy the scenery. We can stop off for Ploughman's or a warm ale, or an ice cream and a nice tea shop along the way. There's no need to rush. From Bournemouth, Glastonbury is about 60 miles away, so that's about 6 hours. We could even make it a 2-day trip, so we only have to cycle 3 hours a day and we can camp overnight, a farm or a pub garden. So if you're up for doing this, find me on Facebook. I'm Charles Antrobus. That's spelled A-N-T-R-O-B-U-S. Thank you for listening, Glastonbury. Oh, and I'm going to leave you with a song. After three. Do, 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 do. It's me tapping the desk. We're all going to a summer festival. No more concrete for me and you. Fun and laughter at a summer festival. New bands playing, so much to do. For a better world. We're going where the music plays loudly. We're going where the grass is green. We've heard it on the grapevine. Now let's see it if it's true. Everybody has a festive pilgrimage. Being different is what we do. So we're pedaling to the summer festival to make our dreams come true. For me and you and the rest of the planet, and for your pocket, and for a sense of achievement, and for the fun of it, just because we can. I think I've crashed.
Dear friends, you've made it all the way to Sunday. Congratulations. We're so glad you're still here with us on the Week in Links. As we're almost at the end of the week, it seems a perfectly appropriate time to let you know what's going on Live Burst throughout the next 7 days. We'll be broadcasting once again on Monday, this time from noon until 1, and our companion show, which remember is also airing this Friday from 12 to 2, The Third Ear, will be following us at 1 p.m. On our show, we'll have the West End review of the giant puppet sporting smash Warhorse. We take a look at what Bournemouth Tourism has to offer, and we have the exciting conclusion to the comedy panel game, Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve?
And now, as it's Sunday, traditionally for many the non-working day of the week, if you're not stacking shelves in home base or selling ice creams at the beach, that is, we have some beautiful and relaxing music for you from our friend and talented flautist, Crystal Zhang. Here's Crystal to explain the piece.
The piece I'm going to play on flute is an arrangement of a famous Chinese traditional music called Yu Zhou Chang Wan, meaning Song of the Returning Boat. The title is taken from the Tang Dynasty poet Wang Bo. The verse of the poem describes the Yangtze River in the evening as the setting sun spreads over the river and fishing boats go home one after another. This solo has spread widely throughout China since 1930s. So here we are, Yu Zhou Chang Wan, arranged by Li Guoquan, played by Crystal. I hope you all enjoy it.
Thank you so much to Crystal there. Truly beautiful music for us. And now, Andrea has a final link.
I was just going to write it later, Lou.
Andrea, this is a live show.
I'm just kidding. It's our guide to procrastination. Do you see what I did there? Oh, I love me.
The Week in Links, a guide to procrastination. Contrary to popular belief, the art of procrastination is not simply the realm of the lazy student or coffin dodger. Indeed, the history of procrastination is a long and glorious one, practiced by many accomplished and illustrious figures. Had Alexander Fleming cleaned his lab sooner, we would not have penicillin today. Mahatma Gandhi actually wanted to exact swift and vicious revenge on his oppressors, but got so comfortable in the lull your opponents into a false sense of security strategy that he never quite got
You're
around
listening
to
kill Burst.
All the And of course, the ultimate procrastinator, God. Had he started all of creation before his final week, God would have realized that, oh dear, Africa is only half done. I think I've got some leftover sand around here someplace. So, pay close attention, dear listener, and you too can be among such illustrious company as our divine creator. Item 1. Cleanliness. Before beginning work, you must first make your workspace like your mind. A blank slate. Welcome to the joys of cleaning. Every miserable chore will seem like a trip to Disneyland. After just a week of avoiding a specific task, you will find that your wardrobe is organized. That ring around the toilet bowl is gone, you have more than 3 pairs of clean socks, and your movies have been sorted, alphabetically, cross-referenced by genre, and then sorted by preference. Procrastination keeps the germs away. Item 2. Sleeping and eating. Regardless of the hours in which either occurs, you need to do both to be at your mental and physical peak. This is a scientific fact. You may find that you get either hungry or drowsy just by thinking about work. This stress presents the opportunity to eat whatever you like, be it chocolate, crisps, or whatever happens to lie at the back of your cupboard. We recommend taking naps at 9 p.m. to be sharp enough to start work, making sure to take a break at midnight for dinner. The real boon is that eating makes you tired and sleeping makes you hungry, so you can spend days in this cycle. Item 3. News. This does not only involve being completely up to date with what is going on in the world, it also includes a little game we like to play called How Many Times Can You Check Your Email in an Hour? Because what if your best friend is pregnant? And what does that mean if your best friend is a man? What if the information you have requested has arrived? How else will you know how to enlarge your breasts and or penis? It is also wise to give news as well. Call your nan. She misses you. Item 4. Distraction. Many writers claim that the best way to find a solution to a problem is to do anything else. Once the mind has wandered, the subconscious will sort things out for itself. This is also called the Eureka phenomenon. And if it can work for Archimedes in the bathtub, it can work for you too. And you don't have an angry emperor to contend with. You also get to enjoy all of your favorite television shows with the one thing that can make them better. Mild guilt. The pressure that procrastinating creates is actually an opportunity. It squeezes down on the coal of your work and creates diamonds. Furthermore, you can bask in the glory of actually managing to finish. The bragging rights from doing better than your colleagues, who started in a timely fashion, and the groupies. So what are you doing being productive? Get procrastinating. Caution, side effects of successful procrastination may include temporary insanity, believing that time has stopped for the express purpose of completing your task, and, on realizing it has not, weeping in the shower. The complete abandonment of quality control, the inability to discern between good and evil, and the shunning of spell check. Night terrors, itchy spleen, vampiric elbow, apple scrumping, and the overall failure to function as a human being have also been reported. But the benefits still outweigh the risks, don't they?
Burst Live. No music at all. Not even a little bit. Okay, maybe a bit. But not so you'd notice.
Welcome back to the Week in Links. As part of Burst Live, I'm Andrea Miller, here with my esteemed co-presenter, Lou Ricketts, who wasn't paying close enough attention to say hello, but... Lou,
hello!
Thank you.
Going to sleep.
That was just our final piece, A Guide to Procrastination, something I know quite a bit about. In my first year of university, we actually set up a bit of a competition, and any time you were in the common room when you were supposed to be doing work, you got a star.
Excellent.
Can you guess who won?
I'm guessing it was you, Andrea.
It was me. By far.
Fair
but
enough.
I still got through my first year.
Excellent. Well, that's fairly typical of students. Procrastination, I think it's there with all of us, isn't it? So I'd like to thank everybody that's helped us on the show today. It's all we've got time for today, but I'd like to say a big thank you to Ooh, Have I Burst a Nerve team, to our film critic, Richard Berger, to Howard Miller, Martin Lane, Crystal Zhang, and everyone who helped us contribute to the show today.
Don't forget to tune in to Burst this Friday at noon for the third ear, and then once again on Monday, come back and see us, same time, same place. Thanks again for joining us here at the Week in Links. From me, Andrea.
And from me, Lou.
And from the entire team, goodbye. We love you. We will miss you in your absence. And have a good week.
Bye.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Grooving all week with you. These days are ours.
Are you bothered with jumpitis, jivitis, gingivitis, or arthritis? Well, Jack, try the fastest-selling product on the market today. It's
Burst Live at burst.co.uk.